Colorado pass the marijuana law? Marijuana law?
It's a new political day in America as the sounds of the election fade and the bands of the different parties put down their horns and whistles from their metaphorical bands of their metaphorical armies of this metaphorical campaign.
Yeah, the Republicans are trying to hold on to any last lingering bit of spotlight they'll get. Some Florida, they didn't count something and, you know, they're just trying to drag out the stories and they're trying to analyze and they're trying to talk about what's next and how's it going to work together and what are these next few days going to be like. And they're trying to hold on to that story. So we should make a bet as to how long we think it'll go on.
What do you mean, like the firestorm of horseshit about how Republicans are talking about how they're somehow they should still be listened to, or that Obama's agenda didn't win or something like that, all that nonsense they're saying?
You know what I think? The Democrats need to now step up to the plate. I know you just won, but keep going on your rise and deal with Hurricane Sandy. Get supplies out there, get gas out there, get FEMA out there. I've started to hear horrible stories coming back in. People are still without power. It's a bad situation, and this post-election coverage is taking a majority of the news stories, and you know they're not showing those images that need to be seen because it's still bad out there, and we need to get moving on that.
I guess
and
a
the
lot
Democrats
of people,
need to step up and do that.
The national media, yeah, okay,
right?
That, yeah.
The whole country needs to do it, but I think this is a, politically speaking, this is a great opportunity for the Democrats and Obama to move into action, you know. You celebrated today, you know, you got this, you got these days with your family and yay, but let's go. Right? I mean, you have a really important job and we just reelected you.
Well, yeah, he's just been reelected by a pretty decent margin, over 2 million margin in the popular vote. The election pretty much came down the way Nate Silver predicted it.
Yeah, it was pretty clean. I guess, you know, I thought there was going to be a lot more issues with the hurricane, and I guess I heard some accommodations were made that, you know, I think in New Jersey people could vote in any precinct. They didn't have to go to their precinct because they had to shut a lot of them.
Yeah, they probably were able to cast provisional ballots outside their home precinct or something in a lot of those areas. You know, I actually started wondering about the margins that might be the margin possibly narrowing in Jersey because of that, but I think the worst affected areas are a little bit less populated out in the eastern shoreline, you know, outside, you know, basically the area below Sandy Hook there, whereas the really heavily populated North Jersey area, like Jersey City and Newark, I think most people were able to vote around there, but yeah, there was a lot of poll chaos. Florida had a lot of problems, and yeah, like that, but that one isn't over, but, you know, Obama, as Obama said, hello, Florida. You know, like, he's probably won it.
Yeah. Yeah, and when do they have until Saturday, I think?
Yeah, and they'll probably drag it on. They'll probably, you know, I haven't really actually delved into that, but you know how Florida is, where they'll keep going on that mess, and they had so many problems with different things. So probably could, or is potential for a lot of different lawsuits and stuff. Well, so
yeah.
This is episode 57 of the DJMCloud.com podcast.
Kind of whistling absentmindedly to herself. What has suddenly gotten into people that has made them so distracted or so unself-conscious that they're just walking around whistling? I mean, is there something out there in the atmosphere that I can't hear that they're trying to block out? Is it part of the alien invasion? Is this all just part of one big, massive thing? Maybe I'm just trying to make connections where there aren't any. It is November, after all, which is NaNoWriMo month for the people who are nerdy enough or masochistic enough to want to try to write a novel in a month. I'm not doing that this year because, frankly, I have other things going on in my brain and I can't write a story. I'm too busy trying to fit together some sort of narrative in my own life, which is why I'm trying to describe every day of my life with one distinctive word. Like whistling. Because let's face it, for somebody like me, that is a challenge, as most of my days would probably go like ennui, 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 nap time, ennui, pigeons, peanut butter sandwich, ennui. I think that combination of words would make for one of the shortest and least interesting NaNoWriMo novels ever written. Either that or some kind of Dadaist poem that nobody would read. I guess it's just too easy to let all the days run together sometimes and not to appreciate each day for its individual weirdness. For instance, on Friday, I began my day by startling a turkey because I was out walking the dog and we were walking in between the apartments and we turned the corner and there was a turkey just standing there on the sidewalk in front of somebody's front door. All three of us looked at each other for a few seconds, and then the dog lunged for the bird. The bird flew away, and that was the end of that. And it freaked me out, but at least I had a word for that day. I had something to make that day stand out from every other day. Turkey Day. It's not even Thanksgiving yet.
Today we're recording on November 9th, 2012, and November is the month that there's a couple of different internet events slash websites slash whatever. One of them is National Podcast Promotion Month or whatever, and people... some people, you know, pledge to record a podcast every day in November.
That's a lot of podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, we put a great deal of work, and by we, I mean Dan.
No, you're the star of the show when you're on. There's some that don't have you, and those I have to try harder to produce, you know, to make them sound interesting. You're the star of the show when you're on.
That was the married we, you know, I always support you in every cool endeavor, and you're doing a really awesome thing right now.
Yeah, well, I actually am not doing the podcast every day one, although one of those things, I bet, you know, it sounds easy, but it'd be hard. It sounds easy for me to just sit in front of a microphone and not make one of our normal quality every day. That would be, difficult, very difficult, but... make a short whatever, like podcast every day, yak in a microphone. Be pretty easy.
Yeah.
Except it would be a strain. Probably after 3 or 4 it'd start to get kinda like, you know what I mean? Feel like an endurance thing. Anyway, I'm not doing that.
What are you doing?
I'm doing the I signed up on the website, but I haven't really followed through much on that. I haven't put too much information in there. I'm kind of doing the stuff, but it's, I don't know if I'd say I'm really participating in the thing. They have this concept of quote unquote winning it if you, you know, make the quota of words. But this is the National Novel Writing Month. They have like a NaNoWriMo site or something like that. It's one of those terrible internet pseudo acronyms or something.
Yes.
But it's, you know, people write novels. And actually, there was that clip before by Jel Lama or whatever from YouTube, who I think is very, it was very funny. And sometimes, though, when you watch your videos, you're a little, you seem a little confused by them or bemused.
Yeah, I think it's bemused.
Okay. That's a word that doesn't really mean anything, so it's easy to say yes or no
to. It is.
Too.
It's kind of fun to say.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Bemused.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the... It's supposed to mean, you know, people actually think it means... A lot of people will write, and they'll use it as just amused. That's not what it means. But, like, a lot of words, that might as well be what it means if most people use it that way.
It's like besmirched met amused, and it became...
That's brilliant.
Bemused.
I've never heard it. I'm not going to try to define it now, because that's a better way of defining it than I could have. Because
besmirched is also sort of
a fun
word.
Have it in there. You've made the point that absolutely needs to be made in defining it in a actually more elegant way than I would have been able to. So... Definitely. So I'm writing a book, I guess. I'm writing a novel in November, and I have it kind of set up where I have to write 2,000 words a day. I didn't really write anything for the first 4 days of November. I wasn't sure if I was really going to do it. But then I...
I'm sorry. Dan is sitting on the exercise ball, and it's a treacherous but entertaining scene nonetheless. So, you are having to write 2,000 words a day.
Well, the pace I put myself on, because I actually started writing really on the 5th. It was in a minute.
My game.
My rules.
Answer me. Yes, you. Answer me, you maggot. You
it
will
was
be
just
the
your
first.
Face and your movement.
To roll the dice.
Your leg was going.
Take the dice.
No, I know, I know. I pull myself back.
You must roll.
Once I realized you were okay.
Do it.
Yeah. No, I know. No, I thought it was funny too. I just was enjoying it instead of like trying to move on too fast. I was just kind of like laughing.
You just extended your leg and you were fine. So I knew you're just like, whoa. But it's like a kickstand.
Yeah. I'm really trying to write a book, make the 50,000 word, benchmark. And I sketched out kind of a storyboard, and now I'm writing 2,000 words a day. And like, I just finished yesterday's 2,000 words like an hour ago.
Yeah, and I got to hear the storyboard, so each day I cheer him on and ask him where the characters are now and what they're up to and how many words, so I like to encourage and, see what comes of this exciting story. Can't wait to read it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it's going to be very good.
Dan's not a salesman.
Yeah.
That's why I'm the salesperson. It will be great.
That's cool. For sure. All right. Now there's, sometimes we talk about our parakeets. I've actually thought... Let me pitch another episode, like a specific episode concept. How about like talking about parakeets? Basically, like going through some of the fundamentals of pet ownership, just like the having like a cage and handling rotating toys and perches and. What kind of different foods are good to give, birds, and what we've learned. I mean, just from, our amateur, owner, perspective, right? I mean, we're, enthusiast perspective, but it's like, it would be cool, right? We could walk through it. It'd be like a nice specialty podcast that people are like, parakeets or think about that. Like we could talk about that. Does this sound like a good episode?
Yeah.
I was thinking it was like a concept, maybe get some notes together and just kind of go like, go through a lot of stuff, and then people could learn something. And I think a lot of people would be interested, dog owners or just people that that don't have pets right now or have fish or something, they might be interested, or cats might be interested in hearing about, you know, bird care or stuff. People, or people with other types of small animals, you know. Well, there's an interesting story now in Japan. This is an interesting story both about parakeets and about police to me. in Japan, a bird got into the hands of police, a pet bird, a small parakeet, and was returned to its owner because its owner had taught it its address. And those are some pretty cool cops in Japan helping out a pet find its home. But
how about you? What do you think about the lizard people?
The lizard people?
The reptilians.
I like them. They're cool.
Now, there's always different ways to tell stories. So, Jessica had some interesting observations about that.
Yeah, Dan sent me the petside.com article. Which
Shout out to Jim because he sent it to me.
Oh, cool. So, Jim, thank you. And that's in the show notes?
Yeah, you can find the show notes at djmcloud.com. And just look for podcast 57.
Yeah, so I clicked on it and I read the story, and it was really engaging. I mean, it has a fun lead, and you know, it tells you the bird's name, and it's got a great picture of a parakeet, so it was really endearing. And I think this is my favorite part of the article. Pico-chan didn't immediately blurt out his address, though. According to a report by the New York Post, it wasn't until Tuesday night that the bird blurted out the names of the city and the district where his owner lives. Like, there's just this fun, exciting tone to the story. And then when we were looking for a link for the podcast tonight, we found one on a coverage, the same story on the BBC, but it was a very boring, stale, dry, informational type. So that's perfect for that audience who just wants a quick little glimpse of, you know, those fun human interest stories. But, you know, Pet Finder, they really did a good job appealing to their audience.
Pet Side?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Pet Side. Pet Side did a really good job of doing a really great content article with great photos. And the photo on the BBC had pictures of, what were those birds, do you think?
Oh, I think they might have been ringneck parakeets, the type of things that English people call parakeets. But some of the birds that English people keep and call parakeets are actually from India, and they're a little bit bigger.
Yeah, so I'm guessing because the story says parakeet, that it's that little guy, because I think we know our Japanese friends, as we look on all our fun little bird blogs, there's a lot of people in Japan who have these little birds.
Yeah, I think the parakeet you're right, a well-established domestic pet in Japan, and with the small spaces in many people's homes and the emphasis on their culture and the kind of harmony that birds enjoy, you know, right? Because birds are very sensitive animals, and calm home is a place where they're going to be singing and friendly, right? And if it's they'll pick up on other kinds of vibes, and they can get agitated or something too if things aren't very, you know, aren't very cool. So I think you see a lot of cultures do prize, you know, pet birds.
Yeah, and I it's just fun because, you know, we have our birds, and you know, they're in a lot of our music too. So I wondered, like, you know, what else that bird can say, you know?
Yeah.
Can it
know its
address? Can it say some other things?
Is that like the one bird that lady has probably, and it's very connected to her, and so it learns a lot of the stuff she says, and you know, it's really really very cool. Yeah.
So I think the big important part of that story, though, is that, you know, pets are part of your family, and you know, make sure you do a good job of doing what you can to keep them safe. And that was really a cool kudos to her for teaching her bird to say the address, because she was returned.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, she you know, she was lucky, but she prepared to give herself that, you know, the ability to get that luck, or how, I don't know how everyone
yeah. put it.
Yeah, and there's pretty big news on the lizard people front. There's a clip earlier where there's a guy from I don't know, he was in Chicago, and then I think somewhere in the north side, and he's asking people about the lizard people and the reptilians, and there's somebody saying that she likes them or something, like she's just being polite or something. I don't know. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, what's the deal on that?
Well, okay, so everythingisterrible.com, and you know, those guys, like they come up with these kind of out there, you know, videos and stuff, and they're talking about working on this thing that's actually like live action puppets, maybe some, I don't know, I don't think cartoons, but some, you know, stuff like that, a mix of other media, and it's going to be about the concept of reptilian overlords. And I played a clip of their video last podcast, number 56, but you know, to kind of explain it, I don't know, because I just played some clips and laughed about it. It's I think, you know, there's some different kind of I guess what people call conspiracy theorists. There's people, now I think there's some mainstream, you know, reasonable people that sometimes get branded with that label as a, like a political cudgel. And then there's people that I think are actually maybe disinfo people that are doing, you don't know what they're doing, like who are they working for or whatever, but they're just spreading crazy ideas or maybe mixing occasional bits of truth or insight and critique with like out there theories and extreme certainty about, you know, grandiose, mad, you know, kind of machinations, you know, the core of power in the world. And look, I think the elites are bad, and that the people of the world have to, you know, the 99% of the world have to just unite against the oppressive, you know, 1% in pretty much every country. And that's, those are, you know, everybody else, you know, everybody else, there's plenty for everybody, and it's the 1% trying to, you know, hoard resources for themselves that we all have to just fight against, whether we're in the U.S. or Russia or China or any, you know, country out there. It doesn't matter, really. You know, so this is a false division and stuff. So a lot of times these people will take that kind of critique. Oh, there's an international elite. Well, yeah, it's a bunch of crooked bankers and a bunch of, you know, lousy, you know, arms merchants and a bunch of, you know, billionaire financiers. Now, a lot of those people on the Romney side lost, but there's a lot of shady people on all sides, and there's more shady people, in my opinion, on the Republican side. But still, there are a lot of shady people out there in the, you know, the elites, and it's no joke. Now, what if you mixed a critique of that with the idea that the most powerful people are actually like reptiles, foreign space reptiles or something? And I think Donald Rumsfeld has been asked about this and stuff. Well, you know, Everything is Terrible is running with it and making this silly like series about it. But there's a guy named David Icke that I think is one of these major proponents of that. Now, he's one of these really fringy things, but he's on like the Alex Jones show and stuff like that a lot. And he's this English guy. I think he lives on the Isle of Wight, which is kind of an odd little place, I think. But it's a very fascinating kind of theory that this guy has. Let's see, video.
David Icke!
See what he's saying here when we jump up ahead a little bit.
The vocal cords. The ear picks it up, decodes it into electrical signals to the brain. The brain then hears what you're saying. We only hear people when we've decoded what they hear.
Durable science in or whatever.
There was a guy called Michael Tolbert. He wrote a great book back in the 90s called The Holographic Universe. He looked at the scientific evidence for the fact that this is a holographic, illusory physical world, which it is. And he told the story in that book of a party that his father held, and he explained
that was one hell of a party.
Is the only frequency range that we can pull into a world that the conscious mind can perceive. Everything else is beyond it. And the electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% mainstream science.
Now he's talking about dark energy.
Free will now begin, so please put your hands together. At least in this country, America, and elsewhere. And it has justified, not really, but it's been used to justify fantastic increases in surveillance and control, all based on a bloody lie. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski. He's a big, long-time mentor of Barack Obama. He's in the demo cons, quite a major one. And when you read his books, he's telling you what's coming, because like George Orwell and Aldous Huxley, he bloody knows, because he has access to it. And he wrote this book, The Grand Chessboard, in 1997, in which he said, moreover, as America becomes an increasingly multicultural society, it may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues, except in the circumstance of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat. So they create one. Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, who was actually on the CIA payroll for years, with the war against the Russians in Afghanistan. And so we have jet fuel. Yeah, that's a good one. And we have these buildings which were of the same design as the Twin Towers and burned more fiercely and with far more heat and never even threatened to come down. And this is just one area. I mean, the 9/11, not one strand of the official story fits with another. If that's true, that can't be true. If that's true, that can't be true. And here's out of nowhere, Cameron announced this
David
year,
Cameron
the
now.
Biggest railway building program since Victorian times with high speed
the
stuff.
And building railroads.
Choo choo.
I know this for a fact.
Yeah.
Fact. Now,
English people love yelling that after they think they've made a point. Fact!
Make it so.
I've ridden in a carriage with a horse. Oh, fact!
Well, I won't get a good job if I don't go to university. Other university students are packing shelves in supermarkets. Surely you have the creative ability to create a life without going through this friggin' sausage machine. Come on, we can do this. We don't need the bloody system. Perception control. This is a major thing that's going on. They're creating an electromagnetic sub-reality to talk to us within the frequency of human brainwave and electromagnetic activity. And this is what these are about. First of all, America, Britain, anyone else listening, we need a massive no-compliance rebellion against these freaking things.
We need a do not call list for the mind.
Watch the word smart. Big red alert. Smart is the buzzword of Agenda 21. It talks about smart meters, smart grids.
I should have
smart cities,
a bell sound every time he hits like those
smart growth,
items,
smart
you know,
drugs,
Agenda 21.
Smart freaking ass.
When
he's talking about smart Agenda 21, and what is this bloody old thing? This is in their own bloody documents, not bloody, you know, sitting in a darkened room working this out. But he's telling you, this is a plan to create eventually a global smart grid. And what the smart meters are, as part of the smart grid, they create, in effect, a electromagnetic internet, wireless internet, in your home. Very, very bad for health, especially the young. And also, it's about not only picking up information from your home and delivering that information to a central source,
but also selling it to merchants.
Put in the tiny dot, or words to that effect. It's hilarious!
Hilarious!
...is they show the American population, this is just a bit of it, by the way, in relation to the number of people in government and Congress, and here, this little bigger one, the number of people in the Internal Revenue, their version of the taxation people. I mean, look at them!
I know that Britain has something called inland revenue. Internal revenue, their version of the taxation people.
They have to recruit from the target population. Don't panic, organize.
You know what he needs is like
a
music from like the Orb or that kind of sound behind him.
The people don't know their true power. Walk away. This is it. Oh, yeah. I've told this story before, but I just bloody love it.
Well, I think this is funny.
I went to, you know, Larry Grayson, the comedian. Shut that door.
I tried to write proud, but I find it fitting because you're writing. So I think it's a beautiful mistake. That's pretty cool. It makes sense for long words.
Yeah.
But, and I could flow pretty easily. I wasn't actually looking. I was just kind of flowing. I wonder if it gets kind of messy though with long words, because it was kind of like scribbly. It's interesting.
You know what? I mean, that's
they're
that's
going in the right direction. How do we make it easier? How do we, you know, use the interface to the best ability that and interacting with a human being and many different types, hand sizes, all that good stuff.
So what Jessica just tried is this TouchPal keyboard V5. Keyboard. She was using this app Epistle, which is like a, you know, just like a text, you know, editing app. But she was using this keyboard where, you know, on Android you can get these different kinds of keyboards. And this one, TouchPal keyboard V5, is a free one.
It's a
pretty good one. I mean, yeah. like I like it. You can swipe your hand around. I think there's different ones where you can do that, and there's some. I have really not tried too many different ones on Android, and I'm not sure if there's there's better ones that maybe Jessica would like a little more, but I was pretty happy with this one. Although then again, that's because, you know, I was using the standard Samsung, you know, keyboard, which is okay, but it's just kind of like, you know, like thumb typing, like it. I just wanted to try to change because I'm writing stuff. And we were talking about that a little bit, but I think I'm just trying to write the 2,000 words at a time. So if I can use a different kind of keyboard, I've been typing on, you know, my laptop, on our iMac, on like this tablet, and on the iPhone also.
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, it's good that you have a lot of different options with Android to play around with keyboards and download, I guess, pay ones too then.
Yeah, I definitely would think about trying other ones, but just this is a neat little change from the standard one, which was okay, but I mean, this was just, yeah, this was a neat change. There's a lot of excitement about the new features and the changes that are going to be coming up in the new Grand Theft Auto game.
Yeah, I think that is a game that I've been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, GTA 4 was pretty good, but it, you know, it didn't quite have the impact that GTA 3 did. And then GTA 3, of course, had, you know, follow-up with, you know, Vice City and San Andreas, which are classics. And GTA 5, the rumors, you know, it's supposed to have a huge map, supposedly. The rumors that we're looking at, GameSpot.com is saying there's going to be three protagonists. You can switch between them a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, I'm hoping there's flyable planes, but I've already mentioned that. Now, GameSpot says, similar to Red Dead Redemption, GTA 5 will have randomized missions and events. So, I mean, I played Red Dead Redemption through, like, once, so I mean, I actually haven't gone all the way through it even yet, but it kind of stalled. But I love that game. I just kind of, I got to a point where I got the map big enough, and I just ride around and do stuff, like, just love that game.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to unlock a lot of the levels and have that free roaming map, and then...
Yeah, that's the whole thing with GTA for me.
Yeah, well, I think, too, with the switching through the three different characters, I hope that they do something really cool where each one has like a different, you know, or unique attribute, or there's some benefit to the storyline with jumping into one or the other. Like, I'm curious to see how those interplay, and, you know, because you have your like costumes and your, not your costumes, but your outfits and your cars, and can one character get the car of another character, or, you know, do you have to manage three separate storylines?
Yeah, you like that. You like the last, now, you know, I think it's the same, overall game company that did LA Noire, right? Which you like that game quite a good deal.
I wish LA Noire, though, had the openness and freedom of GTA.
It's too linear.
I want to like crash stuff, and I was playing.
So I loved Red Dead. It was a lot more open.
Yeah. I guess I just don't like riding the horse.
Yeah, you know, and I love riding the horse.
Yeah. But I do. What I love about the LA Noire is the investigative. I like chasing the criminals too. That's always kind of fun. They give you second chances. I always have to get second chances. Part of the reason why I love GTA is I love crashing into cars and driving around and just having fun and ditching a car and just grabbing another one. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, and then I think, what city?
That's the thing. That's why, it's what made me think of LA Noire. It's going to be set in Los Santos, which is the LA type city of San Andreas, so I'm assuming will be like LA basically, and that should be really cool, you know, like really, LA is really a great cool location. It's where my wife was born, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
LA girl.
You know, it's we look at what happened in California politically, and actually that's one of the bad stories is that we're looking at Prop 37 failed.
Yeah, and Prop 37 was about having companies label their ingredients and label which ones are GMO, and GMOs, genetically modified organisms.
Yeah,
and you know, there's a lot going on in this industry, and you know, it's heavy with politics. I think the side supporting the Prop 37 was about $9 million, and the side trying to defeat it, $43 million. And there's a lot of brands on
industry.
There, you know, quote-unquote organic or healthy-looking brands that are owned by bigger corporations.
Yeah, that aren't really any of that, like Kashi.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of great infographics online, so you can just save them to your smartphone. And I have a do not buy list that unfortunately I keep adding to.
Yeah.
But, you know, Smucker's, Pepsi, because they have, I think, some of the drink brands. It's crazy. And, you know, here's the thing, like, let people make the choice. And if we as consumers want a right to know what's in our food, because we know that food is connected directly to our health and our wellness because it's going inside to our body. Our companies need to respect that. So I'm disappointed that California residents and the people didn't pass it. But I, you know, there's a lot of shady things going on. A lot of stories about fraudulent claims, faking FDA quotes. So just some really bad stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, Dan, we were talking about, you know, the way that California and politics and stuff has gone there, you know?
Yeah, I've been saying, you know, it, you just see how this state that, over the years has led some pretty good trends has now just really, they have, turned down or, you know, past, you know, stuff that, you know, they've made some serious mistakes. Now we're looking at a measure to ban gay marriage. That was stupid. They should just, you know, just let people decide for themselves who they want to marry, as long as, you know, as long as it's consenting adults. Who cares? They want to marry.
Right.
You know? And then California, come on, you know, and you have, you know, a lot of that can, you have West Hollywood and the Castro in San Francisco being major centers of the gay community, and a lot of other areas where, you know, like Californians, that's not the image they like to project, you know, that's a very prejudiced thing to do, especially because people had already gotten that right through the courts. So it's like, you know, really, do you really think it's, not only are you taking it away, but you're
you know, they already had it. It wasn't like you're just preventing it. You know what I mean? It was very disgraceful. And then, okay, so then we move on to, what was it? A couple years ago, they didn't legalize marijuana, which, you know, cannabis. They had the chance to lead on that issue. You know, it seems like a lot of Americans, more and more of the polls just keep going in that direction. People are fine with gay marriage at a higher percentage, over 50% now, I think, and in a lot of polls. And then other polls, pot legalization is at 50% or higher. And it's just people are just like, you know, just let people do it who want it. You know, and if people, it's not something that's really, you know, a big deal. And just let people, if they're adults, you know, get it legally. And you cut out the organized crime and the, you know, the threat of, you know, kind of the shadier side of this stuff. I mean, now Washington and Colorado both legalized it now.
Yeah, there was lots of conversation about that as well. I think socially, you know, it was interesting to see who was talking about it, and I got texts and I saw some Facebook updates and some tweets and some article and blog post. So I think, you know, I'm moving to Colorado, and so do I have to be a resident of Washington to smoke? And, you know, hey, who wants to move to Washington? So just lots of really, you know, exciting things from a wide variety of ages and people from, you know, different walks of life who live all over the U.S. So it's kind of an interesting step, a surprising step, but, you know, I think I've seen the movement make a lot of headway, and, you know, I'm just glad. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think that's it's a sign of progress and tolerance, and, you know, the country just, you know, moving forward and embracing more sophisticated thinking on social issues. And you know, I think that's definitely, you know, that's a good sign. And it's the Senate is still in Democratic hands. I think that, you know, the country is seeing a lot of demographic changes that people have known about for a long time. But in Democratic circles, people, you know, liberal circles, whatever, people have been talking about this for many years, or a good 10 years now, that the demographic wave in the country is coming that's going to go to the Democrats' benefit. Yeah. Whether you're talking about people becoming more educated, whether you're talking about the country becoming more Latino, whether you're talking about it becoming more Asian, whether you're talking about it, a lot of women getting involved in politics and voting and whatever. Like, you know, you have not only the majority of the population, right? But now, if, as long as they make sure to vote, they're going to have an impact. Now, Romney won among men fairly narrowly, but he won, and Barack Obama won among women. That was enough to make up for it. Barack Obama, I thought I saw numbers where he won only 40% of white people. Some probably close to 60% went for Romney, but he won minorities handily. That's enough. It's not a country that's, you know, it's only like voters are 72% white now, and these are just numbers that, you know, I remember hearing. But these are, you know, this ballpark for sure. It's right. It's 72%. Only. Well, and the country is less than 72% white, but, you know, voting numbers, 72% white, about, it was about 89% white in Reagan's day when people were voting for him.
Yeah.
So the country's changing.
He still keeps coming up, you know?
Well, Ronald Reagan, if you put him in context of history, you know, he won two consecutive terms, you know, so, and he had a, you know, he had a big run, but it's also just an anecdote that I heard that they went back to that period, because that's like about, you know, it's like 30 years ago or
so. Yeah, but there's something about Reagan that he just always gets mentioned, you know, and that was a surprising time in California as well.
Well, maybe that's something they talk about a lot in California. I gotta admit, like, they talked about it a lot in the 80s, but I guess it's gotten to the point now where the liberals in the late 90s and early zeros kind of had some sport at picking apart Reagan's record and talking about all the things he did that ended up being, you know, I mean, he didn't really have much of a conservative record. You know, he raised taxes. He did a lot of stuff. Maybe that was logical. You know, he was just governing it at times, but he didn't really stick to the ideological purity that a lot of his followers then claimed was the order of the day. So, you know what I mean? He was able to bob and weave with politics in a way that today's inflexible Reaganites are unable to.
So they've mythologized the man. I'm not saying I agree with his politics. I don't think they were right. I think they were wrong. But he was a more sophisticated politician who would bob and weave and find ways through and work. I mean, Democrats held the House the entire time he was in. And there were like maybe a couple years when Republicans held the Senate. He never had a Republican House when he was a president. And he was still, so he had to, you know, he did have to kind of find ways to work. But do you know what I mean? Like, there was a time when that was okay. That you could strike deals.
Yeah.
You know, you come from your side, but you would govern for the country a little more. It was always a little bit, you know, for your party, a little bit for the country, right? But we're just in an era of, you know, where the Republicans are just ruthless. And I wonder if they're going to try that. You know, it's one of those things that, like, I'm not a big Obama supporter, but I do think that, you know, the his ability to survive the absolute, you know, salt the earth strategy of the Republicans was kind of good for democracy, right? Because they didn't try to govern and run the country,
right,
with the president.
Right.
They tried to, Mitch McConnell openly admitted they were just trying to stop the president, finish the president off, rather than govern the country, lead the country, change, even enact a certain agenda item they were fond of. And that was like, you know, now we see this turnaround where Romney loses after all the a lot of those TV pundits had predicted a Romney win.
Well, I mean, I think they had to. You know, it's what their fans wanted. It's what the
how much of it did they believe, though? There's a lot of talk coming up that the Romney people believed it, but maybe they're dumb. But those pundits, they all talked each other into it, right? That's kind of what liberals are wondering, kind of laughing. It's like, of those right wingers that were talking themselves, how much of it was talking each other into it? How much of it was sincere belief? How much of it was bluff?
30-30-30 and some change for another possibility.
Rachel Maddow played some pretty good clips where she was just like laughing about how the Larry Kudlow and other right-wing hacks on TV were predicting these Romney wins. And, you know, then the Nate Silver predictions were right.
Yeah.
And Obama won pretty big.
He did. I saw some friends out on the West Coast posting comments like, oh, no. You know, just because it was, I guess, pretty tense, pretty late, and people were staying up, you know, wanting to see what was going on.
Let me tell you, I was watching when the meltdown happened on Fox News. Karl Rove was freaking out and saying, that's not right that they called Ohio. There's still a lot of votes coming in, and Romney could win it. There's only 100 votes. There's only 1,000. There's only 900 votes. Whatever. He kept like freaking out and saying this stuff. So crazy ass Megyn Kelly, the one who laughs on Control V and says awkward stuff and makes those comments like, oh, you're such a gentleman. Like awkward like comments with people. Just you know what I mean. Like you saw a little of that. Well, later on, she's walking down the hallway. The camera guys are getting on her face. She's trying to get him away from her and not get too close. And, like, she goes down. And they have all these guys on computers. And I guess they're the stats department, the projection desk, whatever. And they're, like, going to call. They said they're comfortable with their numbers. And she goes on a tear game because, well, Karl Rove, she's not with Karl Rove, but she's talking for, well, Karl Rove said that you're not, you know, because on air, he's freaking out. He's doubting their own call. Like, their anchor is going with it because the stats desk gives it to him, and he just reads the teleprompter or just, you know, takes cues. Like, so he's like, all right. Karl Rove decides he's going to exercise all his independent judgment about it. Of course, it turns out it's wrong. But there was a brief period where, yeah, the Obama people keep celebrating and singing because they basically, you know, they were saying on the different networks that he won and stuff. All the other networks were saying, well, it looks like the president's going to be reelected. Fox News, they're letting Karl Rove come up with all this bullshit. And it's like it goes on. And they have crazy ass Megyn Kelly confronting the stats department guys. And they're like, well, we're 99.95% sure. You know, like, she asked someone for percentage, and they're like, you know, I mean, they didn't really have a problem, because they're like, well, you know, and the county's coming in, there's not enough votes around, and we're probably looking at Cincinnati and Cuyahoga County coming in, and, you know, it's like, what, they're like 65, 35, probably, you know, Cuyahoga County, that's where we are right now, you
that's
know?
That's true,
that's a
yes.
blue area, that's a rare blue area in the Ohio, right? Like, you get a little strip, like the city of Cincinnati, you get the city of Columbus.
Yeah, I heard that.
And then
that.
We have this big wave along Lake Erie. It's the best. It's a great part of Ohio. I got to say, like, the area pretty much from Toledo down until there's a little, like, the Ashtabula area, there's a little hole there where it gets kind of red. But Lake Coast, pretty much from Toledo to Cleveland and a little bit on each side of them, you know, solid blue pretty for the most part, you know, which is nice.
It is.
Yeah. We, you know, got, like, people, like, I had this one more story here about the CEO of a coal company, Robert E. Murray. This is an article on Slate.com, so yeah, you've been warned. But here, I'm gonna read a little part of it. The day after Barack Obama won his re-election bid, the chief executive of Murray Energy, Robert E. Murray, gathered his staff and began to read a prayer. He asked God to forgive America for its choice of president, and he prayed for, quote, guidance in this drastic time with the drastic decisions that will be made to have any hope of our survival as an American business enterprise, unquote. He closed with a heartfelt amen. Then he fired 156 people.
Whoa, that's intense.
Murray explained that the layoffs were inevitable in light of Obama's re-election. And, of course, that's the end of the article that I'm going to read. You can find, like, the show notes. It's, you know, because they go on to, I think, explain basically that that's nonsense. And, you know, like, these companies say, you know, Obama's, because he's regulated mercury a little bit, they're, like, crying foul. It's like, you know, that's a real problem. And that's something that people are concerned about in Lake Erie and that coal fire plant that I think is hopefully closing soon. Because, you know, those things, there are a lot of concerns about the amount of mercury being dumped in the lake. And then, you know, you have areas like Edgewater Park, and it's like, who wants to go in that water then if you really read about what, you know, the nearby coal plant's doing?
Well, it's just, I think, a cheap publicity stunt.
Oh, yeah. They're shameless.
Horrible.
Republican, you know, CEO type people like that. Totally shameless. You know, thank you for joining me for the podcast, Jessica.
Thank you for having me. And if you want to hear more from me, you can check me out at Jessica McKeown on Twitter or at jessica.sf3am.com.
Yeah, awesome. You know, this has been the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. And you can send us feedback. Send it to feedback2012@sf3am.com. You can find the show notes at the site djmcloud.com. I'm gonna see I might talk about the novel again on the podcast.
Definitely.
We'll see though. It might get classified.
Okay.